The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The Chris DeGaulle Show podcast.
Okay, so we got to do the obligatory Tom Brady retiring thing again. It's that time of year where Tom Brady says he's retiring again. Okay, so he's retiring again. And then a couple of months, he'll say he's coming back again. Tom Brady retires like Barbara Streisand tours. Farewell tour, never again. Yeah, I know. And then he'll play again. Or he'll go to the USFL or whatever the hell that new expanse football team. He's not done. And even if he says he's done, if he's not playing traditional football, he'll come back and there'll be a news story about how he's going to sign with CBS and or you know, NBC, and he'll challenge Romo. Like, this isn't the last you've heard of Tom Brady. You know that. Our buddy John Hayward is with us, National Security Deputy Editor at Breitbart. He's also a Floridian. And, John, I'm glad to have you. Watching the Ron DeSantis model is a really inspiring thing, because I don't see any Republican at all, period, full stop. No elected Republican but Ron DeSantis seems to be taking on the pervasiveness of critical race theory and gender dysphoria like he is. And I think it is these two issues in our public schools, in our children's hospitals, in our colleges, they are the most rotten to the core, maybe the most destructive of all the ideologies, maybe the worst for the country. And he seems to be the only one going to war with them. John, good morning.
Good morning. You know, and he does it effectively. Yesterday, he did something that everybody in the Republican Party should do every day and should have been doing for 20 years now. He went after their damn money. He shut off the money spigots that fuel this destructive left-wing insanity that is just ravaging our youth. It's destroying an entire generation. And the way you stop it is you take away their damn money. None of these people does this stuff for free. These gibbering lunatics that go in there and teach critical race theory and your transgender fascism and all that stuff, they expect to get paid, and they get paid very, very well. And if you take their money away, they go away. It's just that simple. It's easier than fumigating your house for termites. Just cut off the money spigot and they disappear.
And if you do this and go at it, they will scream and yell that you yourself are attacking diversity, when in fact, this movement is not about diversity at all. My point, you know, it's not a profound one, but the uniformity that is required in thought, the unwillingness to hear challenges to it, is anything but diversity.
Well, right. And of course, every tentacle of this octopus of the left that has gripped every part of our bloated, incompetent mega government will scream to high heaven if you cut their money off. You cut a nickel, you reduce the growth in their spending, and they will howl like stuck pigs and scream, and the media will run stories. Ignore them. Get it done. You'll be doing the right thing for America. And in a couple of years, everybody will see you did the right thing. And it won't matter that the media ran 10,000 articles that said you were a monster for cutting off the $1 trillion funding to all these ridiculous initiatives. Just do it. You know, do it and prove that you were right. And then DeSantis seems to understand that. A lot of Republicans don't. That's one of the reasons they fall apart when they get to Washington. They're surrounded by hostile media. They're surrounded by the power base, by the deep state. And they say, we can't really fix this. And if we even try, they're going to savage us as monsters. So let's just go along to get along, cut a couple deals, you know, and we'll be okay. Don't do that. Take their money away. This whole corrupt edifice comes toppling down when you kill the money.
I noticed this story last week. It didn't get a lot of attention, but there were a handful of Democrats in the House that got together and formally created, out in the open, a very bold, very proud ESG caucus, Environmental Social Governance. This is another one of these things, like CRT, ESG. You got to learn these things. A lot of people don't know what they are, and they're insidious, and they've been hidden. And now the Democrats are more in the open because some have been fighting and flushing it out. So now that CRT and this gender stuff's out in the open, ESG is now out in the open. We had to flush it out of the bushes. Now the Democrats are like, yep, we love it. We're all about it. And we're going to form a caucus. And there are a few senators, including Manchin, who are now challenging Biden's ESG climate investment rule for 401ks. I don't know how much you've been following this, but this is another one to keep a sharp eye on.
Well, and it's also a prelude. I mean, after they get this stuff in there, then they're going to take your 401k away. That's inevitable as the federal government's finances collapse under Democrat policies. In a couple of years, they're going to say, you know, the only way we can keep Social Security, our noble Social Security system, going is we're going to start taking 401ks. We're going to raid your accounts and put some IOUs in there. So this is part of the process of getting you accustomed to the idea that you don't really control that. It's not yours. It's the state's, and you can have it if they want you to have it. And if they want to put rules in place that force your 401k to donate to environmental crap, what are you going to do about it? You know, you're just going to let it happen. And again, fight the money, take the money away, crush this stuff like a bug. And one of the ways you do it is by getting into the money, because that's when it gets real to people. When you're talking about critical race theory or DIE or ESG or any of this other stupid nonsense, people don't really pay attention until you say, and you're paying $1 trillion for it. You know, as soon as you show them a price tag and show them all the taxpayer money that's being pumped into these corrupt ideologies, people fall off their chairs and start voting for anybody who will stop it. So it's very, very good to bring the money and the funding to the fore and then show people not only is this garbage, but there's a huge price tag attached to it. And there's so much more we could do with the money we recoup from shutting these programs down.
You and I have been talking for, I was kind of thinking about this. You and I have been talking since the Obama administration. I mean, we're coming up on a couple of decades, I think, of talking probably when it's all said and done. A few presidential administrations. And I remember when you and I used to talk about what felt at the time, and this feels so familiar, it's like, of course, he's still in control. I remember feeling like we're being blitzed on all sides during the Obama era. I was a much younger broadcaster then. I hadn't been in this long. But to go from the Bush administration to the Obama administration, I had never covered or talked about news that felt like it was just assaulting us every day. The country felt like from every direction there was some new left-wing initiative just coming at you. Pots boiling over on multiple burners. Of course, that slowed, obviously, with a split of control in Congress and then, of course, the Trump administration. That feeling is very much back now. Sure. And this time it seems even more aggressive and unapologetic than the Obama era, which leads me to believe that era, they learned to go even harder in on it. Like there's no stop. It's foot on the gas pedal with them. It's even more aggressive. Is that your perception?
Well, yeah, and also the pandemic. The pandemic turbocharged all this by terrorizing people, by decisively shifting so much money to the government, so much control. Small businesses just disappeared. Nobody even talks about them anymore. They're not like a political force anymore. It's all been centralized. The big companies profited during the pandemic. The little guys got crushed. It's a sea change. The pandemic changed the electorate, and these people are aggressively exploiting that opportunity. Look at how much money they just flat stole. There was a report that came out the other day about hundreds of billions of dollars in pandemic relief that just vanished. Like, you know, they went to people that didn't deserve them or they were just outright stolen. And what do you get out of the Biden administration? Shrug. What are you going to do? We don't care. As long as we get the money, as long as we get control, we don't give a damn what happens to a dollar of it. And I mean, that sea change is the reason you feel like you're under assault. There's so much money sloshing through all these left-wing deranged programs now that they've got the funding and the power to make your life miserable every single day. And then look at the World Economic Forum. Look at what they have planned for you next. You're not going to eat meat. You're not going to have a car. You're not going to have light at night. You know, whatever else they think they have to do to you in order to make the world sustainable according to their utopian vision, that's what's coming next. And everything happening now is setting the prelude. They want you to feel under siege and helpless, like there's nothing you can do about it, like you're being attacked every single day if you're middle class.
Yeah, and so this $7,500 tax credit for electric vehicles, Biden promoting an electric truck that cost over $100,000 that's been plagued with issues, getting us all on, you know, no more gas stoves. This is something you were just mentioning this. It's so apparent to me, the combustion engine, propane, natural gas, gasoline, stuff that helps you operate things autonomously and not relying on being plugged in on a grid. That's where they want us all. And look how well that's servicing us, by the way, the grid. You got eco-wackos attacking the grid, and that's where the left is driving us all, dependent on the grid. The last thing they want is us driving vehicles, heating, warming, cooling, cooking. It's so obvious to me they don't want us able to do anything independent of the outlet.
And they also want us, I think, with the gas stoves especially, to get used to the idea that they can ban anything they want anytime they want because they've decided it's dangerous. And you have to prove to them that you need it, and you can't. You know, they're not interested. But look at that whole arrogant attitude around the war on gas stoves. Why do you need this? You don't need a gas stove. You can use an electric stove. We've decided they're dangerous. Here's a garbage study written in crayon by this eco-wacko company that makes money by getting rid of gas lines and buildings, and that's going to be our basis for an all-out war on gas stoves, and you people have to prove to me that you need a gas stove. And somebody comes along and says, well, I'm a chef, you know, and gas works better for cooking. And they say, shut up. Who cares? You're just an elitist. You don't matter. We've decided that your excuses are null and void. That is the mindset they want to propagate, that for everything in your life, everything important, everything that makes you independent or that you want, you now have to prove to the commissars that you actually need it. And if they don't like your excuses, it's going to go away. And you don't have a choice. This is all being done by force. Nobody wants an electric car. There wouldn't be a single sale of an electric car in this whole damn country if they were sold for the actual price they really cost. It's only through titanic subsidies that were looted out of your pocket that they can be sold for a price that anybody is willing to buy them. And the people that buy them find out they're nightmares and they don't work and they're not equivalent to gas vehicles. But they want to build the momentum until you don't have a choice. You will have to buy an electric car. They will force you to buy an electric car, and they will force you to pay for other people's electric cars. This is all compulsory. None of this is natural. None of this is an evolution, and none of this is anything anybody voted for.
John Hayward is the National Security Deputy Editor at Breitbart. As such, Nikki Haley, it appears, is about to enter into the discussion as a presidential candidate. I think she's run before. I forget. But anyway, I know people have talked about her flirting with this before. It appears she's about to. I said that you can basically tell everything you need to know about her likeliness of being successful. Trump's not saying much. In fact, when he does talk about her, he's like, yeah, sure. Go for it. That's great. Good for you. So, that tells me Trump's not sweating her.
Yeah, he's not going to take a break from the war on Ron DeSantis to spend a lot of time on Nikki Haley. And, you know, anybody that wants to get in there that thinks they have a reason, welcome in. You know, this is get in there and put out your ideas. I wish her good luck, you know, make a good run for it. I want a wealth of candidates to be competing for my vote and making a good job of trying to get our attention. I don't know how she's going to do that. It's going to be tricky because at one point or another, she's alienated like every faction in the Republican electorate. So everybody's going to have a bad memory of the time from Trumpers to anti-Trumpers to you name it, you know. So everybody's got a memory of when Nikki Haley disappointed them by one of the positions she took. That's going to be tough to get around. Probably not impossible, but really tough.
I'm mindful, though, that here we are entering another week, yet another week. And I don't even know why this is being reported now. Like CBS is reporting like they've stumbled onto something. The Biden-Penn Center documents were found in November. They've known they had these documents since November. They report today like, yeah, we knew that. I mean, we knew they knew these documents existed before the elections. Like, we've been talking about that since they found the first batch of them. But they're reporting it today like it's new news. And the reason I'm bringing this up is there's an interest by mainstream media to continue to keep this document story alive on Biden. And I'm calling it Operation Clean Sweep. There seems to be a commitment to really make trouble for Biden that we haven't seen yet by mainstream folks.
But in a really careful way. It's more like signals to Biden at this point than a real effort to get him. Because if they wanted to get him, if they were going to treat him like they'd treat a Republican, they would be tying all this together to Hunter Biden. They would be tying this to, you know, this crackhead, you know, whoremongering human train wreck of a son wandering around a house stuffed full of illegal documents that Biden stole that's classified intel. And they would be writing think pieces. Was this all a Chinese op? Was Biden taking this stuff to give to Hunter to pass along to his Chinese paymasters? That you would see that kind of thing in the mainstream media if they really wanted to get Joe. They would make a narrative out of it. It's not a narrative. It's a drip, drip, drip news story, and they won't quite let it go. But they have yet to write these big editorials that tie it all together or go on talk shows and tell you, man, you got to look at all this and conclude that Joe Biden is a real problem. They're not doing that yet. So I think this is still in the smoke signals stage to Biden. This is people letting him know that he's not going to have a smooth ride if he insists on running again.
Are you satisfied with the Republicans in Congress? I mean, they've only been at it a month, but I mean, where are we there? I mean, there's little they can impact except for having hearings, maybe even moving on impeachment. Are you there? Do you think they should? Is that a waste of time? How should they be spending this valuable time they have, these 2 years on the clock?
I kind of doubt they'll go for impeachment unless they get something bigger. Maybe the document scandal really blows up with the next fine, and there will be one. There's going to be another batch of documents that Joe Biden stole. It's going to turn up somewhere. He's been doing this for decades, so I'm sure they haven't found him yet. And maybe that'll blow the story up enough for them to move more aggressively. But otherwise, it's mostly going to be hearings. They really don't have a lot of power to do anything else. They're kind of stuck when it comes to the budget because the House gave up the power of the purse a long time ago. They really can't do what they're constitutionally supposed to do.
Is border impeachable, John? I'm sorry to interrupt. Is the border an impeachable offense, do you think, or no?
I think so, but I doubt they'll do it that way. I don't think they'll impeach him for the border, but they'll make noise. You know, they'll make trouble, but I don't think they'll actually go for an all-out impeachment. It would be interesting, and I would like to see that drama play out, but I don't think that's the temperature of the Republican caucus right now. If they're going to impeach him, it'll be over something like national security, and they're going to be very hesitant to make the case that the border is truly a national security issue. It absolutely is. But, you know, a lot of Republicans are okay with open borders, too. A lot of them have big labor payrolls, you know. For the open border stuff, a lot of their constituents are basically okay with this. The Wall Street Journal caucus, we should have open immigration all the time everywhere, and anybody who says otherwise is a bigot. They don't want to cross those people, so they're not going to pull the trigger on anything that big, I don't think.
Yeah, Thurston and Lovey Howell caucus. That's exactly right. They're still, and as evidenced by who they just reelected for a fourth term at chair, right? They don't care what the rank and file voter wants. I mean, Ron McDaniel for a fourth round, I don't think we've talked since that happened, John.
Yeah, I know. And that's exactly right. Rank and file voters, those people didn't matter to the Ron McDaniel return. They don't care what you think when they're picking RNC head. I didn't have like a personal animosity towards her, but you can't look at what happened last time and conclude she did a good job. So why the heck is she back? It doesn't seem like the RNC under her has any way to adapt to the new rules that have been foisted on us for elections. They're ridiculous third world banana republic crap. But if you don't win under those rules, you're never going to have the power to reform. So, I mean, we got to learn how to play that game, and I don't see any evidence that they're going to. And immigration, you know, great example. Rank and file wants border security. They always have, all of us, all through the decades. And our political elite said, well, you're not going to get it. We don't think you're entitled to that. We don't believe in it. We want the open borders, and we don't care what you think. And that's been going on for like 50 years. So I don't think that's likely to change anytime soon.
I do not know how the country looks. Gallup polling says it, that it's the government now. Government itself is a bigger problem than inflation. They just overall, they say their government, the American public, just writ large, says our government is a bigger problem than inflation. That's it. Now, it was a plurality of voters. I wouldn't say a majority, but a plurality. That's a stunning. Maybe that's not new. I don't know that I can remember a poll that just said the American public just says they don't like their government.
Well, and why wouldn't they? I mean, there's a lot of distrust coming out of the pandemic and all that. You know, we're getting into the pandemic reckoning and finding out how disastrous some of these policies were. So people are grumpy about that. And then every day you get another, you know, Biden administration incompetence story. You get Pete Buttigieg out there doing something insanely stupid, you know, and proving that he has no business being in government at all. And after a drumbeat of stories like that every week of how the Biden team is screwing something up, what are you supposed to come away with? Of course, the government's the problem. And I think they understand
right.
That inflation is a result of government policies. And, you know, people are not as dumb as the media wants them to be. They didn't all just wake up yesterday. They remember that 3 years ago, none of this was happening. 3 years ago, we had an expanding economy, inflation under control, gas was affordable. I mean, we were in a good position when Trump left office. And people remember that. And they may not like Trump, and they may not, for a variety of reasons, they may not necessarily want him to come back. But they have reasons to think that the government is screwing this stuff up under Joe Biden. And they know it.
I think that's what makes people so unhappy. You're exactly right, and I agree. I don't mean that people should feel good about their government. I understand why everyone does, but what makes so many people furious and confounded and deflated on our side, how then do you explain that Democrats were able to hang in there? Because it's so clear the public is fed up with the direction of the country, yet the same people that have had us on this path reaped the benefits. And so it leads a lot of, because there's been no natural pressure release, a lot of people on our side assume it's just rigged. It's the game is fixed. it can't be that the country would sign up for more of this abuse naturally, authentically, think a lot of people on our side, I think, John.
Well, I think there's something to be said for the idea that if we had the more solid voting rules of 2 or 3 years ago, the midterms would have been different. It was the Democrats' ability to harvest ballots and play the new game with mail-ins that put them over the top in a lot of places. And they also did a good job of exploiting hot-button issues like the abortion thing to juice their base up and get them to the polls. The Republicans made some tactical mistakes along the way, and they ran some candidates that were just pretty bad. You know, the Pennsylvania was such an outstanding example of a bad candidate being defeated by a bad candidate, you know. The Republicans could have run people that could have won some of those races, and they didn't. That's part of the problem, and that's something to look at. But also, it tells you that people know the government is a problem, but they're in despair a little bit because they didn't vote against the party that runs the government, the party that runs everything top to bottom right now. As you pointed out, they weathered the storm. They didn't lose as much as they were supposed to, and that tells you that there's a despair creeping up among people. They don't think the Republicans can do any better. They don't think anybody can. They're giving up. They're punching out. They're saying, this is what we're stuck with. Now we're on the glide path to Venezuela, and nothing that I do is going to make any difference, so why bother? You know, and that's something you got to turn around if you're the opposition. You got to convince them that there's hope and there's a reason to vote for somebody else.
That right there, that to me, what you just said, that's it. That's the thing. And I'm so grateful that you you crystallize it as well as you do. That's why we have you on. John Hayward, doc_0 on Twitter. He's the national security deputy editor at Breitbart. John, thanks for your time today, sir.
Thanks a lot for having me again.
Ukraine aid just mindlessly, endlessly shoveling money to Ukraine is something most of this audience, I should think most of the country, doesn't support. Not that you wish ill on Ukrainians and not that you support the idea of a Russian invasion into Ukraine. But at some point, one wonders how much money, how many munitions, how much equipment. When Joe Biden says things like, as long as it takes, as much as it takes, what does that even mean? This would be a great opportunity to bring in a gentleman called Hung Cao, a senior advisor at Polaris National Security. And this is the Morgan Ortegas organization that we've just made acquaintances with here in the last few months. And so we're grateful to have you. Thanks very much for coming on this morning. Hello.
Chris, thank you so much for having me. And
yes,
you're right.
Sir.
It's almost like Sally Struthers asking for money for hungry children around the world, right?
I know. It's making our listeners angry, and I understand why, because I feel the same way. What is this limitless begathon telethon thing? I mean, look, we're all sympathetic to people struggling, but for heaven's sakes, for how long and how much?
Right. I mean, on one side, an attack on the Russians because they're so close to the Chinese would cause the Chinese to deplete a lot of their resources to help the Russians. But on the other, you're right. I mean, you see two boys fighting in the locker room. You don't keep throwing knives and brass knuckles at them. You want to split them up, right? I mean, when in history do we keep perpetuating a fight? So that is one of those things I'm concerned about.
So talk to me about why it seems Biden, it's funny, Biden says things like, when it comes to the Second Amendment in this country, you're going to need F-16s if you want to take on the government. Yet, this is interesting. This is apparently his line in the sand. Biden seemingly rejects requests to send F-16s to Ukraine, which I'm not suggesting he should, but we sent, what, 31 Abrams tanks? Why not some jets, too? I mean, is he all in for a penny, in for a pound or not? I'm just trying to understand.
Yeah, well, first of all, he's talking from his rear end. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Why are we sending 31 tanks? You know, it's not like we're dropping a bunch of F-150s over there where anybody can jump in there. These are very sophisticated weapon systems. It's the M1A2, which is the second iteration of it. And my concern is the secrets that can be reverse engineered from this. The armor is classified. It's the CHOBAM armor. And then you've got the SLU-2Q weapons guidance system, which can take up to 100 weapons, 100 targets, and then, prioritize them. And, you know, also the maintenance that is required for that is astronomical. And finally, it uses JP-4 fuel, and it's heavy as crap. And so to fly it over to Ukraine, one C-5 Galaxy can carry two of them, and one C-17 can carry one. So you're going to make all these flights over there just to deliver these tanks. That's going to take months for us to train them, if not years.
Hung Cao with us, senior advisor at Polaris National Security. The headline interested us over at something called Vanguard, NGR.com. China blames U.S. for Russia's invasion of Ukraine. China's foreign minister seeking to blame the United States for Russia's invasion, claiming Washington created the condition that led to war. I actually don't disagree with China here, to be perfectly honest with you. Russia didn't invade when Donald Trump was president. They clearly saw fit to do so when the sock puppet, air quote, became president. I mean, I actually don't disagree with China, which is hard for me to say, but I don't here.
You're right, because there's you know, everybody thinks there's either fight or flight, but there's actually four things. There's fight, flight, and there's posture, which the last administration was very good at doing, or there's submit, right? I mean, and so Joe Biden basically rolled over, showed his belly, and that's why the Russians were emboldened to do that. But we also set up the means for him to do that by not being energy independent, and therefore we were dependent on Russian oil, giving them a lot of resources.
So when China looks to be purchasing quite a bit of at least energy and fuel from Russia at a minimum, do you think they are invested and interested in seeing this go? They deny, of course, that they're cheering on or aiding Russia in any way, in their incursion into Ukraine. But what do you think China's interests are in this back and forth with Russia and Ukraine?
Well, as we're being, you know, pulled into this and you know, I mean, because like I said, the tanks require a lot of maintenance. We're going to have to send people over to maintain them and train them, you know, and so we, all our resources are being depleted over there, and it gives China carte blanche to do whatever they want in the South China Sea.
A distraction for them. So they don't care about it. They just like that we're busy doing other stuff, basically, so they can do what they want.
Exactly.
Aha. That's pretty smart. And so to that end, what do you think they're up to? You think a move on Taiwan is imminent?
Oh, absolutely. So Taiwan produces 50% of the world's chips, microchips, but 92% of the high-end chips, the stuff we need for our weapon systems, for your Teslas and stuff like that, is produced in Taiwan. And so by controlling Taiwan, they basically cut off our supply source. And we would never be able to oppose them because the long supply chain over there, and also we won't have the equipment, the resources. I mean, they control a lot of the resources also in Africa, right? I mean, right now, I think Joe Biden just signed off saying that we can't mine any more of the natural resources in our country, so we'd have to go to the Democratic Republic of Congo, which is controlled by China for cobalt. And so these are things that is, you know, we need to wake up and smell the coffee here.
Secretary Blinken, I read this from NPR, had a plan for his visit to Jerusalem, then he had to pivot. I don't entirely know what this means. Breitbart writes, it hasn't played out as Blinken first planned. The past week in Jerusalem has proved particularly violent. Israeli forces carried out their deadliest raid in the West Bank in years. Of course, that was in response to a massive terror attack. Palestinian gunmen killed 7 near a Jerusalem synagogue. So a lot of violence breaking out there. What is the significance of Blinken? I mean, we know what the Trump administration did in recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. Most folks that I talk to say the previous administration was the most pro-Israel administration in recent memory. I don't really know the Biden administration official position with Israel. What say you?
Well, they refused to enforce any sanctions on Iran, so it allows Iran to have more money to invest in terrorism and also their weapons program, right? I mean, they're within a year or two of producing a nuclear weapon, but the thing that is holding them back is the delivery system, the ICBM. And so they need more money to do that, and we're giving them that money by allowing them to trade now and lifting all the sanctions. And, you know, these are the guys that are funding the terrorists that are attacking the West Bank and in the West Bank, and as well as you know, the Houthi rebels, they're attacking the Saudis, and they're causing havoc all over around the world. And meanwhile, Blinken runs around like a chicken with his head cut off, not understanding where to put his efforts.
And then finally, this Hung Cao with us again, by the way, senior advisor at Polaris National Security. We're kind of tackling a lot of international issues that kind of came to the top of our stack here today. British military, this from Breitbart, said they are unable to protect the UK or their allies after years of cuts. Britain's armed forces no longer to play a full role in NATO or defend the homeland after years of cuts. That's according to British defense sources. That's alarming. I mean, and striking considering they were considered an empire, not but, you know, several decades ago, the most globally dominant force on planet Earth. And if this is true, this is stunning for a once great country.
No, you're right. I mean, because we have allies and we have allies, right? So we have the Five Eyes, which is Canada, UK, Australia, and New Zealand, and then the U.S. Those are the Five Eyes. Those are our closest allies to the United States. And so, you know, to see our top ally saying, hey, we can't do this anymore, it's discerning. But, you know, there's a U.S. general that said that they're no longer top tier. And that's kind of, I don't know, that's hypocritical also, because, I mean, our military, the Army missed the recruiting goals by 15,000. The only reason why the Navy was able to meet is they fast-forwarded all the delayed entry programs. So basically, they borrowed from next year to pay for this year. And then in order to make up for this year, what they did is they lowered the ASVAB scores, the requirements for the tests, the battery test, to bring people in. And meanwhile, our military is being taught, you know, pronouns instead of how to fight a war.
I am just kind of struck that we're having recruitment issues and, you know, we're downsizing and scaling back. And again, I can't help but go back to China. That's one thing China doesn't do. They don't scale back. They don't draw down. They don't pare down. They don't weaken when it comes to their military interests.
No, you're absolutely right. They don't care about diversity, equity, and inclusion. They care about, in fact, their bullets don't care if you're black, white, Hispanic, or Asian. It's going to kill you just the same. And so, you know, they things like us attacking the toxic masculinity, I mean, that's what we want. I mean, I spent 25 years in special operations, and, you know, there's meritocracy there. We pick the very best. There's 75% washout in our programs for a reason.
You're saying when you were in special ops, that was the
yes, sir.
Goal.
Yes, sir. I ran the school for the dive portions of the school, and there's a 75% attrition rate.
Wow.
Because things like the sea, war, hardship, it doesn't care if you're man, woman, or black or white. It's just going to kill you just the same. And so we pick the very best for these programs.
And so what's your knowledge of the way that's being conducted today? Have they scaled back on those requirements quite a bit?
Right. I mean, we want to make sure that we meet all the wickets. Hey, let's make sure, you know, they're dying for the first woman to be a Navy SEAL. Well, the standard's the same for everyone, right? I mean, everybody has to do, you know, 10 pull-ups. Everybody has to do, you know, a certain run and a certain swim. We can't lower the standards because, like I said, war is the great equalizer.
You know, I know it's not war, but it was interesting. Andy Reid, coach of the Kansas City Chiefs, was asked yesterday about, what do you make of the historic matchup between two black quarterbacks, Jalen Hurts of the Eagles and Patrick Mahomes of the Chiefs? And Andy Reid said, you know what, I don't look at it that way. I never really thought about it. I look at two tremendously talented athletes who've risen to the top of their game and are going to face one another as I always have. And I believe him. I think he is colorblind. He sees these guys as competitive athletes and he wants the very best. And he said, I never thought about it. And I thought, what a remarkably honest, you know, statement, much like you just said. I mean, again, I'm not talking about football being as severe and important as special ops, but that's the point. It's the ultimate meritocracy.
You're absolutely right. But let's look at sports. Sports doesn't care about quotas, right? I mean, it cares about the best person out there. And so why are we looking at filling different quotas in the military? Because, yeah. I mean, I'm a 5'6" Asian guy. Why am I screaming at the NBA for not having 5'6" Asian guys out there, you know?
It's a great point. Really enjoyed talking with you, Mr. Cow. I hope you'll come back and speak with us soon.
Thank you so much, Chris.
Very grateful to have the time of Congressman Jeff Van Drew of New Jersey, who we haven't caught up with. Actually, we haven't even caught up with since the new Congress. So we're glad to have a chance to catch up today. Congressman, thanks for your time. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. It's a pleasure to be with you.
This is not why we invited you, so I don't want to spend a ton of time relitigating it, but I am kind of curious at the end of the day, now that you have a new Speaker of the House, you got a few weeks under your belts. What did you make of that Speaker fight, and what do you make of the newly constituted Republican ranks in the House?
Well, I think we're going to do some good things. I have to be honest with you. So much, and I'm not attempting to be partisan or political, but so much was wrong. I mean, what we were doing in the House of Representatives regarding law and order, regarding our energy profile, regarding our police and demeaning and diminishing and defunding them, regarding our military, the money that we spent and just blew everywhere around the world. I mean, we were spending money for gender equity studies in Pakistan. We're spending money to shore up the borders of Egypt and Jordan, where we don't even take care of our own borders, which brings me to the next issue, the borders. There were so many problems, so many things, quite frankly, in my mind, the debt, the deficit, and again, just the constant spending on some stuff that is just so nonsensical. You know, tree equity. I still can't find anybody who's really explained to me, do we all have to have the same size trees, color trees? You know, what exactly is tree equity? I don't know. They don't seem to know, but we're spending a lot of money on it. So, you know, it's got to stop. People work hard and break their back in the country. And then, of course, we had the thing where we were going to make they're really pushing, you know, to make gas stoves illegal and, you know, all these other things where we can do so very much better. So it's been good.
Yeah,
we've done some good bills. It was a rough and bumpy start, but we're doing well now.
You famously flipped parties. For people that don't know you or your background, you switched and joined the Republican Party, I believe, mid-Donald Trump's term? Was it 2 years into Donald Trump?
It was actually in the middle of my first term. So it's going on. I'm going now into my third term. So it was a number of years ago now, but it's still interesting to people. What was interesting, I think, to some folks about it is typically somebody changes parties because they want more power. And, you know, they'll get a chairmanship or they'll get a really select committee to sit on. I was the only one in history to go to switch parties and go from the majority party to the minority party at that time. People switch parties, but never done it in that way. That's how strongly I felt we were on such a wrong and bad track for the future of America.
May I ask, just because you were a member of the party, you saw what it was becoming. We talked to you at the time as to why you decided to join the Republican ranks. As you see people like Schiff and Swalwell and Ilhan Omar holding a press conference last week complaining that they weren't allowed back on intelligence, Do you agree with Kevin McCarthy's assessment? Those people don't deserve the committee post they once held?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, you can look at them, you know, one by one, but I mean, you know, Schiff lied. He said he had seen things and heard things, which he shouldn't have done anyhow, and brought that to the media that weren't even true, that were classified or top secret. So that was just totally inappropriate. The Russian collusion was a big lie, as we all found out later, and nobody could argue with that. You know, then you have an individual, Swalwell, who is having a relationship with a Chinese spy.
Yeah,
I mean, this is, you know, it's like James Bond movies or something.
Can't, you know, make it up. I mean, and they're angry they're removed from intelligence. I mean, how can
you? You know, yeah. I got to be honest with you. The speaker at times is a kind and generous man, and I think he's been so in this case because he easily, and there was cases like with Marjorie Taylor Greene where they just removed her. The speaker didn't, but our previous speaker did, removed her from all committees.
Yes.
Any committee. And he has said, to be a little kinder, yes, they can be on committees, but they should not be on the Intelligence Committee. And they should not.
Yeah,
no country would be that stupid to have people that are giving away secrets to our enemies on an Intelligence Committee.
Well, the reason we called you today, Congressman, I saw you a couple of weeks ago on Fox News with Jesse Waters on his show. Jesse brought to light, the Daily Caller has been reporting on it. It has made the Washington Post now. The Inquirer covered it, but differently, not surprisingly, in Philadelphia. And so it's funny, the outlets and your report, your correspondence with Jesse confirms the concern here. The Inquirer was dismissive of it. Like, this is no big deal. The dead whales happen, but it certainly has nothing to do with exploring wind farm development. But that's not the Daily Caller's assessment. That was not Jesse's assessment. It doesn't sound like it's your assessment. Washington Post headline, dead whales and tough economics bedevil Biden's massive wind energy push. So Washington Post kind of flirting with the concept. What do we know about this? Seven dead whales in under 2 months on the Jersey coast. What's causing it in your view?
Well, they don't know. That's the first thing. Secondly, it's funny how coincidental it is that as they've been doing test borings and testing the ocean ground, that this has been happening. And you know what? The Inquirer should be very concerned. I, you know what I don't like? I don't mind when people are conservative or they're liberal or they're this or that. I'm conservative, you know, but I don't like hypocrisy. And I will tell you that if these dead whales were washing ashore and Donald Trump had been, you know, driving a boat in the area, the Inky would have blamed him.
Or if Chris Christie were still governor. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, come on, just tell the truth, evaluate things independently, objectively, and neutrally. You want to do that? Well, here's the real story. They don't know why. I'm going to give you the real story point by point. Tons of money floating around, multi-billion-dollar corporation. We're way overdoing it in the beginning. If you even want to look at this, you should be doing a pilot program. We're doing hundreds of them. They're over 1,000 feet tall. They're tall three times the height of the Statue of Liberty. They are of great concern to the fishermen. In Europe, they don't even allow fishermen to fish around the ones they have. And they're forced to have them in Europe because they don't have the energy resources we do. So it's a concern to fishermen. It's a concern to the tourism industry. It is concern to the environment, to the ocean floor, to something called the cold pool, which is one of the most environmentally sensitive areas in the world. And there are some environmentalists who truly are concerned with this. Others have been given great deals of money, quite frankly and honestly, by this company, you know, to supposedly help them. So, you know, it amazes me the Sierra Club isn't saying anything, yet people aren't only showing where there are dead whales coming forward. They're bringing beautiful eagles that have been completely macerated by these windmills.
Yes.
Why are we rushing into this?
You make a very good point. The Inquirer story did highlight the fact that there were environmental groups very upset about this wind farm exploration off the coast. They don't want it. They think it's a bad idea. So it isn't that there's uniform agreement amongst environmental lobbyists and animal lover lobbyists. There's not uniform agreement on wind development off the coast of New Jersey. True?
We're going too much, too fast, too expensive.
Yeah.
Here's what's going to happen. We're going to hurt our fishing industry, and we're going to hurt our actual wildlife, our fish. We're going to hurt the birds. We're definitely going to hurt the eagles we have already. It was just so sad to see these eagles that have been just completely destroyed. It's going to be very expensive. The blades only last 15 to 20 years. They have no idea how to recycle them. They're so huge, the materials that they're made out of. And your energy bill is going to go up. So it's not good from any vantage point. I don't want anybody to confuse these wind turbines with the ones that they see in Atlantic City by the MUA, by the casinos. Those are miniatures. They're tiny compared to what these things are. We're going to industrialize our ocean. I don't like it. People don't like it. Businesses don't like it. Fishermen don't like it. Why the hell are we doing it? We're doing it because there's billions and billions of dollars being floated around to do it, and we don't even have the energy grid with it. It's the wrong thing at the wrong time. Let me tell you one other story with it. So, you know, certain towns don't want to have any part of it at all. And Ocean City said, you know, we don't want to be used. We don't want this stuff because they're going to go through their town underground with these cables to connect these things all up. Ocean City said, we want no part of that. We refuse. It's not allowed by our zoning. We're not doing it. So the Democratic majority in the state Senate and the state assembly passed a bill that when it comes to windmills, it doesn't matter what the local town thinks. It doesn't matter what the people think, the elected officials think, or what the zoning is, that they can just go forward and they can do it anyhow.
Wow.
What kind of home rule is that? Yeah, wow is the right word. Is that America? What kind of home rule is that? You know, and so now Ocean City is going to probably look at trying to sue. It's not easy to sue the state. I know Cape May has an attorney. Ocean County's involved. It's just wrong.
That's largely your district, Congressman Van Drew, a lot of that. And so I wonder, can they pool their resources and efforts? I mean, do you think a lot of South Jersey could band together and fight this?
They're starting to. It's really starting to come around. Whether the whale deaths, and I believe they were, but whether we can prove they were due to the windmill exploration on the floor of the ocean or not, it's almost a moot point, but it did one good thing. And I hate to say that because it was so sad to see. It made people really alert to what's going on. Half the people didn't even know we were doing these giant windmills. Other people thought they were like the windmills that, again, you know, the few of them that you have in Atlantic City,
right,
in the MUA. It's nothing like that. We people don't want this precious New Jersey shore to be industrialized. Damn it, would we leave just regular, hardworking people and businessmen alone for a change? Do the billionaires have to run everything? Because it's going to hurt us. It's not going to be good for us. So I'm fighting it. And I'm telling you right now, one of the things that I'm really going to push to do, and I'm starting to work on it a little bit already, I want to have hearings. I want Orsted and these companies to come to Washington and get their asses kicked a little bit. And excuse my language.
No, I love it.
The truth.
I love it.
They need it.
Congressman, I hope you'll let us know the minute you get that organized and those hearings happen. We would love to be paying close attention when they do, sir.
We're going to let everybody know. We're in a fight of our lives. These people have more money than God. They're buying it. Last thing I'll tell you, they're buying everybody off. They're hiring all kinds of people. With that all, I'm just really hoping that what is right is what prevails. So I certainly will let you know.
Jeff Van Drew, Congressman, New Jersey, and I hope, again, we'll stay in touch. Keep us posted. Thanks for your fight, sir. Appreciate your time this morning.
You're very welcome. You take care.
I actually caught this on Fox News, and I don't remember who was speaking about it. I don't remember the show, but I immediately reached out to Fast Eddie, and I said, I don't know why I didn't know about the film, but I want to know more about the film. If you're not familiar with the brand-new film called Grid Down, Power Up, it's hosted and narrated by Dennis Quaid, and I was so fascinated with the subject matter, particularly given what we've talked a lot about here, and that is not only our energy supply, but the fact during the bitter cold around the Christmas season, you remember there were some domestic attacks on the power grid in the Pacific Northwest. That has got me to thinking, frankly. Also about rolling brownouts in extreme cold. And so the subject matter seemed right up our alley here, which is why we reached out to David Tice, who's CEO of Paul Revere Films, producer and director, the creative forces behind that film. And Mr. Tice, glad to have you on the show today, first of all. Welcome in.
Well, glad to be with you and your Philly listeners.
Yeah, you betcha. I think broadly, I'd love to talk about how this film came to be. What was the impetus for it?
Well, I call myself a NASA grandfather. When I started working on this film, my grandkids were 4, 3, 2, 1. And I want them to live a very long life. And frankly, I'm worried about the future as far as the risk of our power grid going down for an extended period of time. And actually, if that happens, there has been a scientific commission that operated for 17 years at the behest of Congress, and they scientifically determined that we could lose as many as 90% of American citizens if the power grid goes out for an extended period of time, coast to coast. And frankly, that is a significant risk from either an adversary taking out our grid, 60 Minutes has talked about that, or a massive solar storm that scientists have said is a virtual certainty. And that's likely to happen, maybe not in 10 years, maybe not in 15 years, but it's going to happen before my grandkids die. That's for sure.
And this gives you more concern, say, than a, quote, warming planet. This seems, I mean, and I'm saying that tongue-in-cheek because, to me, that sounds like a more literal and imminent, provable possibility than any kind of ethereal measurement of inches rising by the oceans or something like that. Yes?
That is such a true statement. This is a virtual certainty. NASA has talked about the fact that there will be a massive it's called a GMD, which is a geomagnetic disturbance, that it will happen. And if our vulnerable transformers in our substations go out for an extended period of time, the most number of people that we've ever had die in America happened in Galveston with about 12,000. We're talking about potentially 250 million. And this is not hyperbole.
You know, and it seems to me that when you're talking about trying to get more, I mean, we've, you know, just in the news here this week, in the last couple of weeks, the gas stove thing, you know, them wanting, they want us on electric cars, they want us on electric stoves, they want to get rid of gas, natural gas, propane, fuel. All of those things have one thing in common, and that is driving us onto an electrical grid, which you're talking about being in a tremendous state of vulnerability. Isn't that interesting?
Yes, it really is. And the fact that California is talking about all electric EVs, you know, in the short term future. In Texas, we're talking about Texas is growing so quickly that our grid is just not big enough and not ready for in terms of capacity. But what we're talking about in this film has to do with protecting what we have. And our military recognizes the threat of adversaries taking out our command control centers, our missile systems, etc. And we have the former vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff saying in a speech about how the military is prepared to, whether they protected all these critical command control centers, etc., but our civilian infrastructure has not been protected at all. What we're seeing in the Ukraine today is Russia is taking out various parts of the power grid in the Ukraine. And we know that going after civilians is in the playbooks of our adversaries.
So, you know, I never like to leave people feeling a sense of dread, like there's nothing that can be done. I do wonder, you know, we always joke in this day and age about people wanting to live off the grid. is that achievable? Is that the way we should be thinking about more autonomous living so that we're not so dependent on this day that could come?
Certainly having some survival skills, having some extra food from Costco, certainly potentially a bug out place is not a bad idea. What I'd rather leave the listeners with is with some hope, because at our film is actually creating a movement whereby under the participate tab, at our website at griddownpowerup.com, you will be able to send letters, emails, as well as make phone calls to each viewer's legislators, regulators, and members of the board of directors of their local electric utilities. And therefore, if we create enough outrage, if we create another Contract with America or Tea Party movement, we're going to create so much outrage that we're going to get this fixed. And that's the solution, is there is technology available that can be provided at the front end of our substations, and we can protect the nation. We have found that as little as 1/3 of 1% of this $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill that frankly doesn't have that much infrastructure spending in it could protect our power grid from geomagnetic disturbance.
Wow. And this, by the way, just to be clear, I don't even hear politics in your delivery here. I don't hear you say Democrat, Republican. I mean, this is an equal opportunity disruptor should this happen, God forbid.
This is so true. This is a completely bipartisan issue. And in fact, in California in 2018, the California legislature passed two bills unanimously imploring the federal government to protect our power grid and also setting up their emergency government agency to be ready for EMP or GMD. So this is so bipartisan.
I hope people will go check out this film. Again, it's narrated by Dennis Quaid, who obviously I think saw fit to participate because he shares the concern. It's not, I don't think you get involved in this kind of project unless you actually share the concern, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And so he's behind this cause. We had a big premiere in Los Angeles. We had a standing room only crowd. The movie ends very, very hopefully with some patriotism. It has great music. We actually have George Carlin in the movie.
Oh, cool.
You should see it. And also have an 8-minute highlights version you can watch. And you should share it with your friends. It's available for free at griddownpowerup.com. You can also download the app from the iPhone store.
Griddownpowerup.com. David Tice, CEO of Paul Revere Films. I really appreciate your time and perspective on this. I think it's critically important. I'm glad you're calling attention to it. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, and feel free to have me back.
The Chris DeGaulle Show Podcast.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.